What should I say more about last time? Well, last time, I think I didn't really address the course objectives that well. But then you have seen the student guide for this course, which is very important to really read well, because it also tells you what I advise you to do for a next meeting and for after that and what the deadlines are, etc. So I will not remind you of those matters during class because you are way too old for that. So it is all in the student guide. But in the student guide, it also said that this course not only has... I have here a student guide print, so I'm quickly looking at that. That you will, after this course, understand the formation of organizational reputation among audiences. That you will understand the significance of crises for reputation. But also, more about action, that you are able to actually measure the reputation and interpret the results for strategic development of the organization. And that is what the assignment focuses on. So the understanding objectives are also covered by the reflection that you will write individually, which is written in the, explained in the student guide. But the group work mainly addresses the capabilities that you can take away after or during these classes. And last time, I also showed you a slide about Malaysia Airlines and that they had had two different crises. I forgot to mention, and thankfully I could see the Monivestin recording, so that helped me check this. I forgot to mention that, of course, the fact that these were two crisis incidents that were really quickly one after the other, that explains why it became such a severe crisis for Malaysia Airlines. And I should definitely also have told to you that Malaysia Airlines probably is not to blame for these crises, yet it suffers a lot, or it suffered, but still does, a lot as a consequence of these two crises. And it even suffers for that today, still. So that raises the question for intense scholars and students, as we are here, why is that the case that even you are not to blame, but you still can carry blame for what happened? Well, maybe one of the things I should say is that they didn't communicate so well about it. I did address that last time, that they were not so interactive, they didn't reply to remarks on their own Facebook platform, so that they could definitely have done better. But also some crises are very difficult, and that is one of the reasons why last time we addressed psychology. Some crises are very difficult to deal with for family of victims that lost somebody, that lost dear ones. So the fact that a plane can just disappear not only from the radar, but that it seems to have disappeared altogether, which was their first crisis that happened of the two, that is so difficult to stomach for the families that somehow you can hardly, of course you can say, you can try to explain it so well that you could not have done anything about it. But of course, you primarily need to show that you connect with the families. So you can't be primarily seen as somebody who tries to get away from responsibilities. That's bad. So of course, this is difficult and very tactful to handle in the communication strategy, so that on the one hand, you stay close to the families, and on the other hand, you also clarify that you are shaken by the fact that this happened, and shaken by the fact that there was actually nothing you could do about it. Okay. So in the case of Malaysia Airlines, it shows us that to know of course, there are people who say, could they really not do anything about it? Because one of the reasons that has been assumed for the loss of the first airplane was that maybe the pilot had either personal issues or that he had terrorist affiliations. The latter has not been proven very clearly, but there were some indications for the latter. And in such cases, it will always be so that your future passengers and also family of the deceased will always think, did you do the utmost to provide at least care for your employees? And if they had psychological problems, for example, that was noted. And this was definitely an issue for German Wings. That was a later plane with similar problems. So precautions a company should be able to make, and that is also what you can comment on. Of course, you should also realize that the expectations are very high. So if something so large is at stake, and lost family members are really something very important, then also realize that the expectations are very high, because nowadays people really expect a company to be very interactive, and not all are yet that. So it needs a very large staff that is trained, for example, people like you. And also aftercare expectations are high. So I should mention trauma care. I should mention memorial sites, memorial events. Those were all matters that may not have been so common some decades ago. So all these expectations have risen, and they all need trained personnel. So what are we going to do about that training today? Well, we talk about more precisely looking at the definitions of corporate image and measuring it and reputation. We'll use a case example, but mainly we will use your own case. And that will help prepare for the questionnaire. So today's program, you'll understand the core concepts better than last time. And for measurement, you'll know how measurement is done and how you can apply it in your own casework. And you will have a start for your questionnaire and can continue doing this with your team. So corporate image is defined, and I'm now talking about the book that I showed on the first slide, the monitoring book. And if anybody doesn't have it yet, but maybe you were the ones that were there last time and have it all. Anybody who doesn't have the book? Okay, well, fine. I still have some with me, but that may be an extra precaution. Not needed. Corporate image is the image of the organization as experienced by various publics or stakeholder perception. So this is a bit longer definitions than just public perceptions. That should be shortest definition I can give you of both reputation and image is public perception. Now I'll go to the definition of corporate image. And as I told you last time, it has a bit more attention for emotions and impressions. So it relates to taking shape in people's minds, and that of course already means that it's very difficult to take a look at it, because what you will try to do in your assignment is to actually look into the mind of some audiences. So that means that in the way in which we measure it, there might already be you might more or less be successful in capturing the image that is actually in the mind of the people that you talk to. But I'm quite sure that when you ask why and make a real contact, that you will learn more than when you would do this as a written survey or something. So that's why we're not doing that. So it takes shape in people's minds, which also connects with some of the psychology matters that we talked about last time. It is highly personal, which means that we can add it up for groups, for target groups. But you always, the more you add up of different sources, the more you also lose in reliability of the data. So it's very important that when we compare groups that they are clearly defined and that we do not have too much differences within a group that we found. So if you want to compare target groups, for example, you could compare people below a certain age or with people above a certain age. It might also be okay that you even leave out the middle group to get an even more clear picture that makes the company wonder why there is such a big difference between the two. But anyhow, it should be clear. Well, the image also is time-linked, which means that when we talk about these matters today, it will be a different result than when you would talk about the same topic a year later, of course. But when we look at this from a sociological perspective, we should look at the social context in which the interviewees are functioning. So that context is also changing, and it is time and place linked, and what you hear could in that sense be quite different. And something else that makes us usually very humble as researchers is that it varies from vague to vivid. And that may relate to the level of emotional memories that people have. Usually, a high level of emotions also means highly involved, means a more detailed picture of the organization than when it is something that you didn't have real close contact with. That is, of course, why familiarity is so, how well do you know the organization and how do you actually relate to it, is normally also part of the questionnaire. But in this case, we will not let you focus too much on familiarity. So it conforms more or less to the identity, and that is also important for managers to understand, because it could be that people have a really wrong impression of reality. But still, it matters to us what they say. And I'm always surprised, also in the middle of crises, why are crisis managers not always interested? It's a big problem worldwide that they are not always interested in our monitoring results. Because they sometimes say, do we care what people talk about on the web? Is that real at all? Or does it matter to us? Well, as soon as you want to connect with people and explain people, have a true conversation, of course you should know what's on their minds. So you will have to explain to bosses also why it is needed that we know more about people, because otherwise we cannot truly connect with them, and they will also immediately feel that we're not really interested in that. So it conforms more or less to the identity, and where there are differences, we should develop knowledge where we expect that there will be major points of dissimilarity based on what you learn from the literature and what your experience in work will add to that. So it's created from experiences. So among people, people have experiences more or less directly with the organizations or through media. So that is also important to note, that some may have more and others may have less intense experiences. It consists, the image, as I look at it, consists not only of evaluations, so not only opinions about the organization, that they love or hate it also, well, that's more emotional already, that's, I think, also very relevant. But it also has impressions, simply what are people thinking of when they hear the name or they see the brand of the organization, their immediate, so what is actually, when I was showing you last time these pictures of the brain, which lights are, so how can we understand what people associate with the organization, because that is just as important as their opinions. So it all influences the climate in which many decisions are taken. So on each separate decision, it is very difficult for researchers to prove that the corporate image really has effect on, for example, only buying behavior, or only shares, or only if you want to be an employee. But if we add up these different behaviors, you see that it forms like a basis underneath many different behaviors. And of course, for each behavior, also the possibility, for example, the money to be able to buy a product, is one of the preconditions. So it's very hard to prove that it's connected to one behavior, but this is a sum up that is relevant for many different behaviors in relation to the company. So influences of the image on behavior, corporate image is just one. Okay, this is just continuing about that, but it affects many different behaviors, okay? That brings me to a question. Could you please apply this to a well-known organization? And I suggest that we apply it on Unilever. And I will tell you a bit more about Unilever, but before that, today, it's not Jenny Huvarinen who will facilitate the interaction, but it's Sarah and Ina who will do so. Thank you. And so Unilever says on their website, this is their slogan, sustainable growth and values. We change the way business is done. And the kind of products that they deliver is food and drinks, and home and personal care, and something else, but that's a bit out of their league, I would almost say. So these are the brands that you can think of, Lipton, for example. It's actually a very, very long brand list, because as you may know, in this type of products, the link, so the name is often different for the company and for the product, especially in this area, you see that in food and home and personal care, that there are many different brand names with which different niches or different parts of the market are covered, sometimes very similar brands. Of course, there is always this tendency now that the number of brands is reduced because we think that it's only possible to build big recognition for a brand, let's say for the top three brands in a certain area. So you see that the number of brands gets lower, but in this area there are relatively many. But this is an example. And so please buzz about this with your neighbor. So what do you think, can you make it more concrete for Unilever? So why does it matter? How does it matter what their reputation is? So I'll give you 2 minutes to discuss it with your neighbor, and then we will collect some answers.
Thank you. Okay, so I think I will be teasing this group at first. I heard you have some really good points here. Would you like to share them?
Well, we were discussing that Unilever is wants to be one of the biggest players in the market, so it's very important for them that they kind of stay in the forerunners as a forerunner, so that there wouldn't be too big crises on sustainability issues, as they say, the sustainable growth, and as especially because they are in the food and beverage market, so there is always also a lot of public interest for those products. And what else did we discuss? Yeah, okay, so that was also related to, we were discussing about health issues and also the ethical issues that's also very important in this particular sector. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Maybe someone right there?
Yeah, sure. How about this group?
Well, we were talking that I think Unilever has been doing a very good job in the sense like their brands are the products. So let's say there would be a crisis for Rexona, it doesn't directly affect Lipton. And in that sense, it's easier for them to keep the reputation of Unilever, but then they are more keen on keeping the reputation of the brands.
Thank you. And also that arises a question, should we care more about the brand of Unilever, or is managing of the individual brands more important in this case?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Here we have one who wants to say something.
So these are kind of Unilever produces kind of day-to-day products. So I don't think there's so much engagement. Like I don't think anyone says like I'm a Rexona girl and I'll always be this way, you know. So there are lots of substitutes. For example, if Rexona would undergo a crisis, I think that'd be like it'd be easy to change the product. So it's important to keep the reputation, if that makes sense. It's easy to substitute the product.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
So, how about here? What discussion on Unilever?
Yeah, we talked about a little bit similar topics that they have so many brands, and not necessarily, for example, me, when I saw some of those brands up there, I didn't know that they were even like part of Unilever. And so, in that sense, it is like in that sense it like separates the brand from like the Unilever in a sense that if many people don't know, like, yeah, this is like the parent or like these brands are part of this company, so it's easier if like a crisis involves only a certain brand, so obviously it's easier to manage it rather than it would affect the whole Unilever like identity or company.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Maybe one more. Is there anyone? Yeah. Could you pass to me?
So I was also thinking that based on that slogan or that text over there, the brand or Unilever's products, or the promise that they have with their products, is very value-based. And there are a lot of companies which gain a lot of customers just based on the low price. So if they do have a crisis, they still have the low prices, and many people will not maybe think too much about the crisis because the price is so important when making a purchase decision. But with Unilever, the prices are usually a bit, not too much, but they're on the middle range, so they also need to think about their reputation more in that sense.
So that's for now. There's just one other in between, so we'll be soon. Okay, well, interesting, a big player. So for a big player, actually, you're right. They really want to be top-notch. So it matters a lot to them. They have a very large group of communication specialists, and they connect. I think that's still the case. Yeah, they connect it with finance, actually, investment relations, because it's so important also, not only for the consumer market, but also for sharers. Yeah? Big player, yeah. And these health and ethical issues, I thought, were also very good to mention. So there are, because it's such a broad range of products, but I don't know who said that, but it's very good to connect, yeah, with this. So the issues or the crises that could come could hurt more, especially in such areas. And then I liked what you said about brand identity, because there are different, we call it identity types, but actually it's about how you present the organization and its products. And, of course, integrated communication has taught that to some of you. So there can be a monolithic identity structure, which means that the same name is used, basically. But this is a branded identity. And the question that some of you had is, how much does it then relate to the corporate reputation, the corporate image? That really depends. In some cases, the connection is not so strong, but in other cases, for example, they had a major old crisis between Procter and Gamble and Unilever that basically was about the brands Omo and the brand Ariel. But for years, the connection was really more clear that it was about Procter and Gamble and Unilever. So after a crisis, the connection is quickly made with the organization, but depending on the type, of course, of crisis. So that was a good point to keep in mind, more as a question mark. And then somebody said, and that was very smart too, less engagement perhaps. But on the other hand, so that means that products might be easy to substitute. So that might also mean that it has a big effect. That was, I think, a very smart remark too. And then the question is also, how much space is there for such an organization and its brands to really look at values? Because a lot of consumers look primarily at price. So how many opportunities do you really have to go into this value-based profiling of the brands and the company? I think they're trying to do that, but it will be interesting to see in how far they are able to realize that. I thought that was very clarifying. I hope you thought so too. Let's go to the next one. And after this one, there is immediately a question also for you to connect that to your own topic. Thank you. So the book has a more elaborate approach. It has 6 elements to measure. But actually here I thought, also based on student feedback earlier, I should focus on some large blocks. Actually, I also thought about that because you're doing it now for interviews. But I think that this approach of corporate image is so flexible that you could also use it, if I make it easy enough to use flexibly, which is what the 4 blocks help for, and not too detailed. Then you can use the same in the back of your mind when you analyze social media comments. So you can try to find and code social media comments. You don't need to do that now for the assignment. There is another course that relates to stakeholders and change and monitoring. That course will ask you to monitor online. But the same idea in the back of your mind you can use in for many ways to collect data. It is just a way to analyze the data, trying to sort them into these four boxes and to see that actually all these four boxes together form the reputation and the image of the organization. And especially image, because I am stressing more the impressions and the emotions. So you see in the purple block, I call it block one, or block A, I made it. Block A is about impressions. So there are questions that relate to impressions that can be part of your questionnaire. And they all relate to finding which associations do you freely get from your respondents. So this is a way to openly ask, so you don't yet give away your hypothesis or your ideas behind choosing this this topic for your assignment, but it's a very open way to look at it. So it's about associations, it's about immediate emotions, if it has a ring immediately for people. And then the second block, the B block here, is about perceptions. And perceptions are actually which features people think of, which characteristics or features, that's the same, dimensions, you can also say of the identity. What are people thinking of? Which features do then show? And that I want you to measure, because I want you to use this measurement method as it is developed in the book. And if you have enough experience with it after this course, you're free to do it totally different otherwise. But now, go with the method, try it out, give it a good try, and I think you will find that it's helpful, but after that, you can also do it differently. So there is there are scale questions needed, and the type of identity-related questions, so which elements relate to the identity of the organization in that sense, in the view of the respondents. So, and what you give are opposites. And you ask people on a scale if it is more this end that has a name and if it is more that other end of the scale that has an opposite. So this is not a statement with a question mark. This is different. Of course, this is modeled from a history in research where, for example, Kotler also uses similar measurement on the level of products and services. And here we apply it on the level of corporate image of the organization. Well, the green block then, the C block, has statements, but also with this same scale measurement of five alternatives. And there you can fill in some of your hypothesis, actually. So some of the crisis or crises that you want to know more about. And of course, this you ask later than the open questions. So we begin very open, and then it becomes more precise. Because if you immediately ask about your ideas, you will have influenced the whole talk. And if you start open, you can be surprised what they mention. I will later call that a not attribute-based start, because you are not filling in the attributes, but it's the freedom of the respondents to tell you which associations, which attributes, characteristics, features that person is really thinking about. So the impressions, open, the perceptions, we have these scale elements, is still quite wide in what you choose there, and then the statements where you more precisely can ask what their opinion is, if they agree with the statement about that or don't agree with it. So these are often attributions. So opinions of people about an organization, attribution, I explained that the previous time in psychology, people always attribute a cause. They tend to attribute a cause to also to things that may actually be just coincidental. We always, as humans, try to make attributions of cause, which is, of course, a danger because you could be wrong. So evaluations often have to do with attributing blame to either the company, or maybe it wasn't a Malaysia Airlines fault that the plane went off the radar. So that kind of attributions can often be measured by these statements with skill, with scales. And then there is a fourth block, and that is about preferences. And as this is an open way to ask questions, I think it is very honest and open to ask your respondents what they feel this company can do better. And there again, you have an open approach. So it's an open approach to start with. You get more and more precise. Your own ideas become more visible. And it's lovely to end also with something that is quite open. That's, of course, it might be influenced by your questions earlier, but quite open-ending, what could this organization do better? And I still remember that when I was actually implementing such reputation questionnaires, outsourcing the actual interviewing so that we had hundreds of respondents that we could compare, for example, if it was just a national matter. And the diversity was not too big in the groups that we were comparing. So, and then I had to work with an agency, a research agency, that had all these interviewers. And they always said, why do you want to ask these stupid open questions? What's the use of that? But basically, the open question that I, for example, for the union of the Association of Universities in the Netherlands. I worked on a national level for them. I also did lobbying with Parliament, but this was also one of the activities that we wanted to know how the public viewed the universities, also in comparison with applied science, for example. So there was one open question in that questionnaire, and that was, what do you associate the university? But I had to fight. I mean, I was buying it from them, but still they were like, no, we don't want to ask what do people associate. This was actually phone survey. That's a phone questionnaire, I still remember. They hated it because it was all the coding that they had, because it's so easy to ask an open question. But then to organize the data, of course, it is a bit more, takes a bit more work. But I got the question, and it was the only question that actually gave me so interesting results that we got a major budget after that. And after that, I could make a whole series of television programs about fundamental research, because that was something that never popped up. Because the associations of the people on the telephone were all with very large groups of students, and maybe they said high quality education, but it was all with education, because the newspapers that people were reading, for example, the Saturday newspapers, they were about research, but that research was not connected to a particular university. And they never heard enough about fundamental research. So they also had no understanding that sometimes you're not immediately getting research results that can be immediately useful in society. So such things to explain that the universities also should keep some of that budget themselves, and not only get that budget through funders that use specific agendas and influence what you can study, but that there should be some freedom to do some research in connection to your education also, that gives you like a basis there, or that doesn't immediately need to serve. That is, of course, an issue that is still relevant today. If you're, by the way, interested in research budget discussions and political discussions, you could be interested in my blog. So, but you can find it if you want it. Okay, so that open question, what do you associate universities with, gave me the best results there, actually. Okay, but the perception scales, so the different alternatives, they also were very useful to measure. For example, we through those scales we found out that actually there were very positive associations that scored higher in these comparisons for psychiatric hospitals. That was when I was working for the national healthcare organizations. So psychiatry is part of that. So and the psychiatric hospitals got very good results, actually almost the results that we thought would fit much better with ambulatory care when you would go to a psychologist. So when you would go to only once or twice and you're still living at your house and you get... everybody always then makes a joke that if you don't get that help in the States, you're not considered mature. Well, that kind of help. Psychology. Not psychiatric help in an institution. So actually people didn't know the difference and had a too positive or maybe not entirely correct image. So they didn't really understand what was happening in psychiatric hospitals. And we found out because we compared, we had some of these opposite scales. And then the statements, of course, and we found out that opinions for, again, another investigation, do you know Golden Tulip Hotels? So they have a very fierce way to get members, and these are, of course, all companies or organizations, and if they're a member, they get discounts, etc., and they are quite aggressive in their telecommunications about that, always calling and trying to connect and make people a member and give you these advantages, of course, also. So we did an investigation comparing non-customers with customers, and it was very strange, well, initially, that the customers were more critical on some of these statements than the non-customers were. So the non-customers apparently were not aware of some of the ways that were used to almost pressure people to become a member, whereas those that are a member were actually more negative about this organization, which is, I think, for the board, quite a shock. Yeah. So it tells something when we analyze this further, it told something about the advertising ways, actually. But it was, and that was a result of these statements. So you see that also that block of questions could be quite essential for an organization. And then the number four block about preferences. We set up, for example, which one shall I take? And for a big hospital in Belgium, I did an investigation. And there we found out that especially the internal target group, the employees, had a lot of preference ideas what the hospital could do better. It's actually when we, later on, we were, so there were a lot of lovely results that we got for this preference question, a relatively open, a bit less simple than I gave the example, but okay. So we found out that it was really important to ask preference questions for them, and especially for the internal groups in that case. And that's similar to some other investigations where we also had business-to-business partners, so partners, companies that you collaborate with, that for that group also the preferences, the open question, for example, if... I'm going to march into examples. It's okay. So what do the four elements mean for your own topic? So what actually do you expect to find for these four elements for your own topic? And now, so what kind of matters do you expect to find, or can you reasonably expect to find? Yeah. So that is the question for almost everybody here. But now I have also a question. Is there somebody here that has not yet a team? Because if that is the case, please, while they are talking about this and buzzing, please go down here and we will find connections for you. Yeah? But is there anybody who's not yet in a team? I mean, that's very possible, but no? Okay. Also fine. So please then talk about, and I will put the four elements, of course, again on the screen so that it becomes easier to answer this. Yeah? So what do you expect to find, what could you possibly find about that organization for each of the four blocks? Impressions, perceptions, evaluations, like opinions, yeah? And preferences, what could you expect? Go ahead. Yeah. Can you let me know when you think they're ready?
Yeah.
Is this too early for you? Do you need some more time?
Yes.
Did you talk about all four matters yet?
No.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry. I'll hear it from you too. Yeah? When they're ready. Not yet. Continue so that you have something for all four.
Okay, maybe at least one group has something to each section. So maybe you could tell us your company and some ideas.
Okay, so we choose a company called Finlayson. It's a Finnish company that manufactures, for example, towels and bed sheets. And there was a recently, they had a marketing campaign that caused a bit of mayhem in the social media. Should I t- tell about that? Okay, yeah. So for the impressions, we found something that we expect that the respondents will answer. So they one of them is this. Well, it's produced in Finland, so it's a domestic product. It has a long tradition here in Finland, and some people consider it very, it's a good quality product, or mm-hmm. some people may say that it's not. And some other associations may be home, family, cleanness, so the feeling of new bed sheets and clean towel. But also one negative could be household chores that relate to these products.
Okay, maybe some other group could continue from there.
I heard here some ideas, so could you introduce your group and your company, what you have, and maybe some comments?
Well, we have a company called Marimekko, and the crisis in there was that they straight copied the logo, the tree, wooden, whatever that was, and it was in Finnair's planes and in everywhere and everything, something like that. And then suddenly they realized that it has been copied from some old artist. So that's the crisis. But we really didn't get into this one. So we don't have anything in there so far. Sorry about that.
And here was one point.
So, hi. We're a group of 5 people. 3 brown people and 2 white, but yeah, we wanted to be more diverse. So we took Nestle as our case company, and how that, you know, the CEO wanted to privatize their water market, but the company came out saying that we don't want to do that. So we're exploring how they are being their own hypocrite, an oxymoron kind of thing. And yeah, we are analyzing on those stuff. Oh, yeah. The perceptions are, yeah, the impressions. We think that it's like a huge company who has a giant monopoly on everything, because it's the second biggest company in the world after Procter & Gamble. And, yeah. And the emotions, we have very negative emotions because they've been involved with so many scandals that you can't name it. And being a really big company, they could actually not be in those scandals. Like, say, they had this instant noodle brand called Maggi, and in India they had this thing which had very high levels of phosphates and sulfur, which killed people, which is not something you expect from a French brand like Nestle. And, yeah. And perceptions, we think it's a huge scale company, and they have a very big identity. Yeah. And they're involved in, like, so many sectors. Yeah. And we believe that they should be more ethical compared to where they stand, the evaluations, yeah.
I'm not writing everything down.
Thank you for your insightful comments.
General things. Yeah. Go ahead.
Is there anyone who wants to say something?
Especially if it helps with the preferences.
Yeah. Any ideas to that?
For your own topic. Well, the last group implicitly said that there was something very wrong with that product, so... yeah. Yeah, clear improvement options. Yeah. try to make it very general, that overview. Yeah, is that what we can get out of it now? Okay. Thanks again. Yeah. If I look back on what we heard, well, there might still be reactions. That's also true. So don't sit down yet. But about impressions, I heard some very different examples for that. But what I wrote down, it's not complete, of course. But I'm not a very good secretary. But I'll do my best to help the two ladies. So connect with their life. So I heard from one of the first groups that reported that associations that people had, impressions that people have, are often matters that concern these people themselves, are highly personal. Maybe I should have written personal, but yeah. So then often the impressions that people give you are a connection to what it means to them personally in their life. So that could be for all topics a way to look at it. But one of your groups helped us there. And then there was another group that said, well, there are some pretty harsh views that we could immediately already hear when we ask openly for impressions. There could already be a memory, depending on, of course, if you can interview the right people for that. But there are people that will immediately say it killed. So that's very harsh views. So there's some emotion that could show there. And then for perceptions, there was one example. There were some more examples, but okay, I just wrote down big, because that is just one of the matters you can ask in a semantic differential. I will explain the word better later. But these scale questions have opposites, and big and small is just an example, but a nice example of what you can ask for. And last time I already told you that if the association, if the perception is big, that it might also mean that people connect it to something else. And that is kind of confusing, the image, because that was a psychological point of view, that people often connect some characteristic with another one that may not actually connect well to that organization, but because big is often connected with unfriendly. And then for this section on evaluations, there was one nice example of your group that they said, well, people could be very pro or con. So we expect that the evaluations lead to a clear division between those that are, well, of course, there are a lot of people vague that don't know it, but those that know more about it might be split, and or maybe those that know more about it are also very negative. So a big difference in opinions is expected for some of the topics. And about preferences, well, if there is a clear crisis and something clearly went wrong and there is an attribution to the organization, which is not always the case, but in those cases you expect clear improvement suggestions by people. And in other situations when there is no such clear attribution of blame, for example, then that is not so, will not be so clear. So that helps you to form some expectations for your own topic, what you could hear from your respondents. Thanks again. And that helps us along the way to... Huh? Oh yeah, that was the question, we had it already. To go back now to the definition of reputation, to clarify the topic, the concept. So actually the definition is pretty similar. It's just that it rates performance by a commercially patented tool. So the measurement is very different. Whereas image is an open access tool that you can customize further, as it is in the book that you have. So it is defined also by Vombren and Vombren and Van Riel and such publications, that it is a reflection of the organization's actions and initiatives as they become mirrored in the eyes of the stakeholders. So what it means, or how it is seen in the eyes of the stakeholder. You can even see that the word I is used, and it's still actually referring a lot to the word image, because that is also more a visual association, even though I say that an image even has smell and other senses in it. But the word image is, of course, a picture. So here you can see that it is quite similar. But you can see also from the title that this definition comes from fame and fortune, how successful companies build winning reputations. I should have taken an example from that, and my books would have sold also much better. I'm way too nuanced, but I'm maybe more suitable for the academic environment. A collective construct that describes, that is how they put it later, well, not later, actually, in this case, also earlier, the aggregate perception of multiple stakeholders about a company's performance. So this is, they're actually saying an aggregate or an added up perception of multiple stakeholders, whereas I always say, be careful adding up too much, because you might end up with something gray, whereas if you, but of course, later they also compared different stakeholder groups. So this looks a bit more like the fortune rankings of the financial stakeholders. So it has some of these advantages, that it allows benchmarking. So if you make the data quantitative and somehow focus more, in that sense, make it more simple, but then you get something that you can better benchmark. And I've also made benchmarks, so it's something that I also find worthwhile to do. It's just that I think the two methods should complement each other. And actually nowadays, I would like more that people would use observations on the web, which is then yet another approach. Okay. Yeah, and these rankings, actually, they are... You will find out that the image is disappointingly vague for many of the target groups. Of course, the closer you go to partners, partner organizations, and people who really know your organization, the more it will tell. But when you do street interviews, for example, you will be disappointed that people know so little but on these organizations. But if you think, you might know also not so much on Unilever, and that's why I explain what type it is, and maybe you do know it, but you might not know other examples so well. But these rankings are similar to the university rankings, and I have filled them in for years. And of course, I am happy that the University of Jyväskylä is mentioned in the rankings now. And of course, I know that some other universities rank even much higher, but other Finnish universities were not ranked in the latest ranking. But they're different. So if it is Elsevier or if it is another that is doing the rankings, the results are also different. So, but just imagine that you would be a scholar like me and you would be asked to fill in very, very lengthy comparisons in your own field, okay, but still it's a very, very long list. You all the time have to rate the quality of these. So what is the credibility of what I fill in? Personally, last time I thought I'm not filling it in, because this feels so uncomfortable. But an earlier time, I still thought I could could judge a little better. But, well, I got more critical. So it's good that you look at these rankings with some reservations. But, of course, it means a lot for a company and for a university if you can tell we got a top rating. So it means a lot, but at the same time, be aware of the fact that such... are actually examples of almost big data that do not always give very reliable results. So what are you actually then measuring? But keep that in the back of your mind when you hear respondents answer your questions. So, and some questions actually work better and more reliable than others. So that is also something to learn. But the elements, I think, of the general reputation measurement are very interesting, because they have questions, whole series of them, but they're patented, so not open to use for all. Some have been published now in articles, but not the whole set. Some are given out in courses that you usually pay a lot for to do, and that I actually ask you to become a client of this, because it's a benchmark. So the more organizations that do this, the better the benchmark gives insights into how you compare with competitors in the same industry, for example. But part of that is so financial performance, products and services, innovation, workplace, governance, citizenship, and leadership. So I think that list has become more complete and makes it more interesting over the years. It's just that you already smell that this actually can only be filled in by insiders, because you couldn't go to the street and ask the general public to tell what they feel about the financial performance of Marimekko, for example. Who knows? Yeah. So in that sense, also these rankings and the rankings of companies, as I had one mentioned on the previous slide, they often are among financial experts. So the experts know how to rate them. And that is why all these measurements have a financial bias, because it's usually mainly the financial. And so there is really a need to talk more with what I call the general public. Maybe it doesn't exist. But I mean citizens, I mean customers. Research often has different forms, and you may already know that it could be telephone interviews that are quantitative. They can also have qualitative elements, but usually they're mainly quantitative and are also hundreds of numbers. They could compare different countries. They could, so it's usually quantitative materials. Surveys, for example, online surveys, and nowadays there are families that kind of are bought, and they fill every week a lot of different surveys in. So that you could say that makes it less reliable, because these are specific people that fill in a lot of questionnaires. On the other hand, they are willing to do that, and in that sense, that is a resource that many companies use. And then, of course, you can search for data that are already on the web, and that is a trend that we use what's available rather than generate special new information. But again, it's like a portfolio, so we need to combine different data sources also to get also some deeper qualitative insights. So still, interviews are also done with key stakeholders. Mainly what you are doing, we focus on the key stakeholders, for example. When you would like to evaluate your lobby activities, it makes no sense to send a survey to a member of parliament. They will never fill that in, and of course they don't have the time to do that. But if you then have some kind of panel discussion, or you go to them, you might hear a lot, and that might give you a lot of qualitative information. And of course, you need to bring something to them, because you cannot get data from busy people like members of parliament if you don't bring them, let's say, insights from the sector that they couldn't know otherwise, but that are valuable because members of parliament want to know what's happening on the work floor, what's happening among citizens, among customers. So that kind of information and opportunities is so then you have like a win-win from the conversation. There's also a focus group or panel interviews. For example, municipalities usually have a panel that could have repeatedly each year the same people in there, or rotating focus groups with different people in there, so that they talk about a neighborhood with a group of people from that neighborhood and how they look at the services by the municipality, for example. But also Greenpeace-like organizations, NGOs, often use these focus groups to hear more from members what they would actually be interested in to go deeper. Observation of samples online, again, you can do that quantitative and you can do that in a qualitative way too, but then, of course, you need to take samples, because otherwise you will drown in large data. Why did I talk about that here? Let me just for a moment check. Ah, I wanted to go to this question. So the question is, you can collect it in many ways, but for you, you can do your interviews in many different places. And you can also search for different kinds of respondents. So I would like to give you the opportunity to buzz for your topic about the question, where and whom could you interview? And to help you a little bit along, you could discuss, do you want to do street interviews? So, or street interviews is a word that we don't really only use for on the street, but it's not yet minus 20, so you could actually still do them on the street. But the word means public places, yeah? But where then? And if you want to do them somewhere inside a mall, for example, of course you should always be aware of the legal and you should do things nicely, so ask if that is allowed. Or think where you actually want to do that. I mean, if you want to talk about a company, you could, for example, go to some kind of internet cafe that is neutral area, but not at the entrance of that particular company. I would not advise that. It's not so nice to do. It's not good for the relations of this university. You can also choose to Skype if you are comparing maybe people with a different nationality background, for example. Or if it is really difficult for you to find the right interviewees nearby. So you can think, do I want to invite people? Which is maybe to some extent not so reliable, but then it's qualitative anyhow. And these interviews are a way for you to experience what it is to do such interviews. And of course, we will just imagine that everybody could interview, let's say, 8 people. To do more would not learn you more. So you don't need to do more than 8. Well, you can if you want, but that's not what I require. Because I think from 8 you will already have learned enough, each person. So each person should have this experience. But you should, of course, talk together where and who and how do we divide that up and how do we take care that then is 50% of the respondents, which is easier. Then you don't need to round it off and take percentages. So take the same numbers of each group that you want to compare. So divide it in that sense that maybe you find so and so many females that are above that 8 and I find, yeah? But you could also say, I want to do some kind of random example, because I want to be on the street, and then it's random who comes to me. But I will just tell some coordinator that I have now found 6 males that wanted to talk to me, but not yet any female. So the others on the street, call them up, yeah? So just an example how you could do it. And we will just imagine that those 8 that you personally do, they add up within your groups to a larger number per team. But that is 10 times as much at least in practice. Maybe we should say 20 times. And then you can say, well, now I feel more confident in interpreting out my results, assuming that it's actually based on 20 times as many people. And now I dare to come up with some recommendations. Yeah? Could you talk about this? And then I will find out by Sarah or by Ina when you probably are ready, because I cannot see that, but you can see that. Yeah? And it is almost time for a break also, so maybe we don't give them so much time, 2 minutes or something. Yeah? Let's just take this.
Okay, let's not make the discussion too long. What about your group? Sorry, I'm interrupting your discussion, but who and where you're going to interview?
Yeah, we're just going to see who we meet. And if we don't, like, we're actually, our company is VW, so our two groups are people who own a VW and who don't. And then we're just going to ask people we know, and if we don't get enough people, we'll go on the street.
So interview someone you know.
Yes.
Okay. What about you? Where are you going to do the interviews?
So we were just debating that because our company is from Tampere, where I'm from, and the rest of my colleagues are from Jyväskylä, and we were discussing if it was possible to get like a sample half and half, so that we would know if locals are affected by the situation more strongly than people who live a bit further away.
Okay, that's actually a very good idea.
And then how about here in the middle? Could you...
I think that we're still kind of in between, yeah. Like the company that we will choose. So maybe it will depend a bit on that, but probably we'll just, out of convenience, focus on like university students anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. What about here? Do you have any ideas where you're going to interview your people?
We talked about that probably we're going to interview people that we know. And like they said, that if we don't get enough people, then we go to the streets or maybe, for example, in Akora.
Okay.
And here was a group that wanted to come in.
Hi. So since we're from different countries, we thought, you know, we're going to get online interviews from our countries, 8 people each, and 5 into 8, I don't know the math, but 40 people approximately.
But still talking?
Yeah.
Not surveying?
Not talking per se, because you cannot ask them to, because we have time zone differences. But
yes, something like we're chat?
We're going to fill like a questionnaire thing, and they can click on their options, and that will give us like a statistical data.
I would not like you to use a quantitative method that gives just closed questions. So which is why I suggested Skype as an alternative.
Yeah, we can Skype too.
Okay, so think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, or another alternative where you...
Or you can just put like a box where they can put their...
Some people use chat
yeah.
platforms for that, mm-hmm. so that you're more talkative. Yeah?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, anyone else who wants to share their ideas or... Okay, yeah.
Our company is Stora Enso, and it's... we were thinking to interview 2 different age groups, and we have to still check from the company's history which age groups could be good, because this company had to close down many... factories, so we will try to see like this age group that was affected by these things, and then the other group will be maybe young people under 25 or something like this, so we can compare the age groups.
Have you any idea where you're going to do it, like online or? Okay. So, in a public place.
So, okay, thanks for now, because I think it is time to go to Piatto if you still want to eat something warm. That is still possible until 5 o'clock. Yeah. Other things you can still get longer. But.